you smell what Barack just cooked?
I'm here to challenge you to a match.
When it comes to standing up for the American people, I am ready to rumble.
I think that we may need a wrestler in the White House.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Great American Bash. My name is Brandon Weatherby.
And my name is Chris Kelly.
We're in Washington, D.C., home of the White House and home of the future Trump Hotel. So regardless of who's going to win the presidency, well, actually, no, not regardless. Most likely, one person will be living at 1600 Penn and one person will own property on the 1200 Pennsylvania Avenue block.
Do you think if he loses or when he loses that he'll just live there?
Because he can say,
I live on Pennsylvania Avenue.
Absolutely. And there'll actually be cool merch that say, like, Pennsylvania Avenue, home of the Trumps, or something to that effect. It'll be great. It's wonderful merchandising. And the reason why I wanted to open with that, even though it's not part of our notes, is if you live in Washington, D.C., part of you has to have thought for the last year, like, this is just a giant ad for this hotel. On Pennsylvania Avenue, there's a giant Trump coming 2016 billboard type of thing that they can't legally take down.
Right, because it's not, it's for the hotel.
That's
not
so
for
smart.
The campaign.
That is
wink,
so
wink.
Smart. It's so great.
Yeah. Well, when you run your campaign and your business is just an extension of your personal brand, you know, you get into the areas like that. But here we are.
All right, here we are. We're not on Fifth Avenue. We're talking about Pennsylvania Avenue. Earlier in this campaign, Donald Trump said if he went out and shot somebody on Fifth Avenue, he would still win.
Yeah, and it's true.
And it's true. And guess what? He doubled down.
He doubled down.
Hillary wants to essentially abolish the Second Amendment. By the way, and if she gets to pick her judges, nothing you can do, folks. Although the Second Amendment people, maybe there is, I don't know. But
so that's a thing that happened.
Yeah.
A real thing that happened.
You know, and the beauty of it, it kind of is just what the beauty of the way he uses language. Like, there's this kind of illiteracy to his promos where there's always this wiggle room.
Have we completely stopped pretending that this isn't wrestling and we're just going to use promos rather than
just
speeches or stump
promos,
speeches?
We'll just use all the terms. We won't break kayfabe. And there's the wiggle room to all of his statements. So, you know, we played the thing and you can hear it there. What he wanted the audience to take away from it was clear. But because he really can't form a complete sentence, there's always plausible deniability. Like, he said Second Amendment people could do something. So, yeah, they could go be active at their local government and vote and organize. No, he was saying shoot them, but he didn't say specifically shoot. And he's done this repeatedly. Like the crying baby thing we talked about last week. He didn't say, I'm a monster, get that baby out of here. I am not joking, but it was implied.
So you think because his entire promo has been one long run-on sentence, it's fine?
It's not fine. It's actually kind of brilliant.
He is a brilliant man. I think we should make that very clear. I think he's a brilliant man.
Yeah.
Or completely delusional, which equates brilliance.
It could be both.
Once Kanye, I know this is not a Kanye podcast, but we're clearly Kanye.
What shirt are you wearing right now, Brent?
Chicago Street Fight shirt.
In the style of?
Old style.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you for that shirt.
Yeah. You know, but the Trump telling Second Amendment people to do what they want, I think you brought it up. The first thing that came to mind wrestling-wise would be the infamous Pillman's Got a Gun angle from November 4th, 1996. Am I the only one that sings that to Janie's Got a Gun?
Oh, no, you're definitely not the only guy. What I was just doing, I was not making eye contact with Chris. I was looking at my phone. Do you know when election night was?
When?
The next day, November 5th, 1996, the day Hillary Clinton becomes first lady for the second time.
A two-time first lady in wrestling parlance.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, so this was a
perfect,
a
perfect
great angle that you can probably find on, you know, Daily Motion or something.
You cannot find this on the WWE Network.
No, you can.
Was trying to find it on YouTube
and
stuff.
I'm pretty sure it's there.
All right.
This was kind of one of the proto-Attitude Era moments. Where Stone Cold was in a feud with Brian Pillman, his former friend.
WCW partner at back in the early 90s, the Hollywood Blondes is when Stone Cold clearly had hair.
Right.
And then Brian kayfabe and sort of IRL went a little crazy.
Yeah, and that's, I think we've talked about that before. That's a great, his whole last years of his career and life, unfortunately, were great. But the angle was basically that Austin was
really
going
quick.
To...
I want to make it clear that Chris didn't mean the last years of his life were great because they ended poorly.
No.
He was saying in storyline they were great. It's sad that it ended poorly.
I thought that was clear.
I don't think it was at
well,
all.
I've been listening to too many Trump promos. I've forgotten how to speak English. So the storyline is that they're in a feud, and Austin is going to take it in his own hands. He'd already injured Pillman in kayfabe, sent him home. Meanwhile, Pillman actually did have a real injury. But they have a... Basically, during Raw, they're doing the simulcast thing where they're cutting to Pillman's house where he's sitting there with an interviewer and his wife. He's got his ankle all casted up. And, yeah, he's like, well, you know, there's reports that Austin's coming to your house.
Notwithstanding your bravado, do you feel a hostage? You feel like you're a hostage in your own home tonight?
Ah! Steve is a dead man walking because when Austin 316 meets Pillman.
Oh my God.
9 millimeter o'clock.
Oh my God.
I'm going to blow his sorry ass.
He's out
straight
there,
to hell.
He's a Steve Austin's out there now, man.
What?
And so basically, Austin, like a horror movie, makes his way past the people on the outside, makes his way inside the house. And then as he broke in, Pillman pointed the gun at him. And then the camera feed was disrupted. And the on screen director contacted commentator Vince McMahon and reported that he had heard a couple explosions. And then the transmission was restored shortly before the end of the show. Viewers witnessed Pillman's friends dragging Austin away from the house, Pillman aiming the gun at him. And he said he's going to kill that son of a bitch. And he also said, get out of the fucking way on live TV, which they weren't able to censor. There's actually no gunshots ring out type of thing, but they cut it in such a way that it seemed like there was.
The year is really important for this. This is 1996. This is before reality TV exists.
Right.
So the only thing that this kind of looks like is cops.
Definitely.
And those are real guns on cops.
Yeah.
Those aren't fake fun guns. Fake fun guns.
Fake fun guns.
This isn't somebody saying, like, hey, maybe people that like the Second Amendment go deal with the presidential candidate. This is like, oh, my God, that's a real gun. And we're still not 100% pretending this is sports entertainment.
With
we haven't crossed
stuff,
over
yes.
yet.
We know that, and fans knew, and they've known since the early part of the 20th century, that the fix was in with the finish. But with this stuff of kind of blending real life, this wrestler is going to someone's house, he's got a gun, you know, there was still crossing the line. And Pillman leading up to this, his, you know, kind of unleashed character, this wasn't out of that character.
So, yes, the WWF and Pillman have apologized.
Yes.
Stone Cold still, to this day, thinks it's a great promo.
It is great.
It is a great promo. As recently as 2010, he's been on other radio shows and talked about it. And if you don't like it, he understands that. But it got heat, and
got
it was
heat.
The right thing to do.
And it was, you know, second only to his promo on Jake Roberts as far as getting him to that level where he was the guy that saved WWF.
So it's two gentlemen, both in the WWE Hall of Fame, that do not concede their love of guns.
Correct.
All right, moving on.
Yeah, so there's a piece in the Washington Post.
The Washington Post, it's a great piece. It's sort of interactive, sort of not. I recommend that you look at it online rather than the print version. The print version is great. But if you use the interactive version, there's a scroll at the top, and as you hover above it, it has Trump's falsehood, what he said, and then as you put your mouse over it, it'll say what it actually is.
That's pretty nice. It also, cool. As you're scrolling through, it kind of cuts to the highlighted parts of the transcripts.
Yeah, so this is called Trump, A True Story, and it came out in the Washington Post this week, on August 10th specifically. It's by David Fahrenthold and Robert O'Hara Jr., and I know that the Post is doing a book about Trump, so I'm sure there are many, many more people into it.
Right.
But I find this incredibly fascinating because this is one of the few times where Trump kind of shot himself in the foot.
Right.
It's all about him taking a journalist or a writer to court because he said, hey, what you wrote isn't true. And then the journalist is like, no. I disagree completely. And then he was disposed. Disposed, Jesus. He was deposed for 2 days. And a lot of facts came out for the first time and maybe the last time in Donald Trump's life.
Right, as far as his net worth, his ownership stake in certain buildings, you know, and because he couldn't help himself, you know, and this does have political consequences, and we've seen it, and it is one of those things you worry about if he was to win. It's like he couldn't help himself, even though he knows the truth. He still has to take the shot at someone, and it did bite him in the ass.
So the article begins with a really great note. It's a note that he wrote to the journalist that, Peter, you're a real loser, because Peter wrote that he has got a small minority stake in a Manhattan real estate project. Trump came back and wrote, it's 50% small, but he didn't have 50%.
He had 30, but as he kind of makes clear in all these in the deposition, 30% can be 50% if he got a good deal.
Exactly. Another way, another example is like he said he got $1 million for a speaking engagement. He got $400,000, which is still a lot of money. But he says, but if you add in all the advertising that this the company did for my speech and for my program, it's worth $1 million.
Right, which is false. But it's also it goes back to that when everything kind of funnels to Trump, the brand. He does have a point the way he looks at it.
He's completely insane and completely correct at the exact same time. And this is from December 2007. Not that long. This is 9 years ago.
Right, this wasn't one of the 90s cases or
The 80s cases or a man that's still like figuring out. No, this is a grown man that is in the AARP at this point.
Right. He's a couple years away from buying Monday Night Raw. Another thing that he can say, I bought Monday Night Raw, even though he definitely didn't.
One of my favorite parts of this entire thing is a lot of it you don't need to lie about.
Right.
Having that much, having $3 billion is still a lot of money. Why do you guys say six?
Yeah, or why 30% in one thing is still a lot. What's the difference between that and 50?
Yeah, so why? Like, so it doesn't make any sense. There's one other point I want to get to. If you hear the papers rattling, that's what it sounds like. It's papers rattling. He talks about his father a lot, which is interesting, too, because of the whole Vince McMahon connection. We'll get to there in a second. The name Meredith McIver comes up again. People that have no interest in wrestling will still remember her name because she's the one that wrote Melania's speech, and she tried to take a bullet for them, but he said, nope, I love you, you're loyal. Twice in this deposition, I cannot say that word correctly, twice in the deposition, he goes, oh, she got the facts wrong. But she clearly didn't get the facts wrong. She, by the way, she's one of the co-authors of Mr. Trump's books.
Right.
WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump's books.
Correct. Thank you for making that correction. Yeah. You know, and she's someone that's trying to fall on a sword or he's trying to push on a sword at various times, but survives with, you know, by loyalty, which is something we see in this kind of parallel case or perpendicular even. Because in the Trump case, what we see is the fact that he has to keep up the illusion of the character of Donald Trump no matter what. Even when he's being deposed, even when someone's going, 50 is not 30, he goes, maybe it is.
He will not break kayfabe. And this is the point I wanted to get to that's incredibly important. Quote, I want the record to be crystal clear that every single word, every question, every answer, every word is confidential, said the attorney Mark Ressler. This is from the Washington Post. In 2009, a judge dismissed Trump's case against O'Brien. Trump appealed, but in 2011, that was denied too. Along the way, this one confidential deposition became part of the public record when O'Brien's attorneys attached it to one of their motions.
Right. Isn't that what happened in, what was the Oscar movie about the Catholic Church?
Spotlight?
Yeah. Isn't that how they got the depositions? That's a real thing that happens a lot,
sure,
obviously.
Yeah. Oh, it is, yeah, actually, yeah. Yes. So, yeah.
So he was protected if he could have stopped it.
Exactly. And he didn't need to sue this man. Right. The ending of the piece pretty much says, like, Donald Trump only sued this guy. He didn't care about winning. He just wanted to make this guy's life hell. But the writer of the book says, I didn't care. My publisher covered this, and I was right. It didn't matter to me.
Yeah, and insurance. He was fine.
So, well, that's very interesting, and it sounds like, oh, this journalist won. It did take up a lot of his time, and nothing has stopped Trump. He will not break kayfabe.
Right.
Unlike
Vince McMahon.
Unlike the WWF CEO, chairman, and creator, whatever you want to call it, him and his wife, Linda McMahon, were sued by a handful of people, specifically the state. Was it the state of New York?
Right. It's a federal. Was it state or federal? I think it's federal.
It was in Long Island.
Yes.
I know that. And to me, whatever.
No, it was federal. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So a federal trial against the McMahons and the WWF as a whole, Titan Sports, in the early 90s.
94, yeah.
We've mentioned this on the show before because in 2001, Stephanie McMahon compared this trial to 9/11.
It was their 9/11.
It was their 9/11.
You can't prove that it wasn't.
Okay. So the difference between WWE Hall of Famer Mr. McMahon and the guy that created the WWE is the guy that created the WWE is willing to say, it's all fake.
Yeah, which they had done before in smaller things. They'd done it to get out of taxes by saying, no, it's not a legitimate sport, so we're not paying sports taxes, it's entertainment. But in this, obviously, the stakes were a lot higher. It was a federal, you know, conspiracy case to sell drugs at that point were illegal. The steroids had been outlawed in the late 80s. And, you know, explained how that was not what they were, you know, that wasn't what they were doing. He had never done any of this stuff. They brought in people. This is my tie into the loyalty, was that Hogan didn't implicate him, even though he was at the other company at that point. He just said, oh, I had used them to recover.
I only used it to recover, which is an important part. He was cleared of a few charges were dropped. He was cleared of the one that actually went to a jury, I want to say. Mm-hmm. And he's fine. He could have been in jail.
Right.
He had to break kayfabe to save his ass. Trump still hasn't had to break kayfabe. Do you want to tie this? I know it's out of order what we were
I know what you
have.
Were getting to, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, as far as kind of making someone's life hell over this stuff. So the Hulk Hogan's case against Gawker, as we've found out in the last few months, has basically been a kind of, what word am I, like a proxy war by Peter
Trojan
Thiel.
Horse Trojan for Peter horse Thiel.
To take down Gawker for having outed him years ago, because that's the type of stuff that Gawker likes to do. So he's bankrolled this case, bankrupted Gawker, and also the co-defendants, which is Gawker, Nick Denton, the founder, and the editor who wrote the piece, which was a kind of tongue-in-cheek play-by-play of the Hogan sex tape. And that's Gawker and Denton have already filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. But today, or in the last couple of days, an article has come out about the editor who wrote it, A.J. Delario.
Yeah, it's in Forbes this week.
Right. Gawker and Denton have been protected by Chapter 11 from Hogan seizing their assets. And he looks like he's about to do the same. Basically has $1,500 in the bank, a frozen account, has no job, about to lose his rent. I mean, that's the part where he's not going to be protected by, you know, his publisher or in his...
And he was going to be, mm-hmm. except Hogan's lawyers took him to task and said, hey, they for some reason that I don't understand because I don't understand the law,
right.
They can no longer represent you when it comes to the sentencing, I guess, or the
yeah,
execution
it's a weird thing. He has
of
the same,
thing.
He no longer has the same lawyers.
Yeah,
he
because
cannot have the same lawyers
for a long
Gawker.
Time he was protected.
Right.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Okay, so we just tied Hulk Hogan to... The Titan Sports lawsuit to the most important lawsuit that's going to affect journalism in 2016, the Peter Thiel, Gawker, Hulk Hogan case, and guess who is at the RNC?
That would be Peter Thiel making remarks on either Wednesday or Thursday.
I was in the room for that speech, and it was incredibly boring and not really poorly received, just adequately received. It happened.
Right. He made two remarks that were kind of important. Just one where he... You know, as we said, he is gay. He made some comment about we shouldn't, you know, let's stop talking about which bathroom we're using and kind of taking a shot at the transgender rights movement, mm-hmm. and also something about the culture wars.
I don't pretend to agree with every plank in our party's platform, but fake culture wars only distract us from our economic decline.
You know, so basically saying, no, these culture wars of saying who's gay and not and who gets protected and not, they don't matter except if it's me, and then I will bankrupt your ass.
It's kind of great. It's sort of like how everyone completely ignored low culture during the entire Republican nomination process.
Right. And, you know, one of those people I think might be Stephen Colbert.
Now, Colbert, we missed it. Our favorite All-American wrestler, John Cena, was on Stephen Colbert's show last week, the night we recorded.
Right.
We knew he was going to be on. We knew he was going to do something cool because it's John Cena and he's a cool dude.
He did a lot of cool things, I think.
He did a lot of cool things. Colbert clearly does not watch wrestling, which is perfectly fine.
Sure.
Completely fine. And it's pretty obvious because you could have had like 14 months of lovely material that could have united a country. Nope.
Missed it. He did ask Cena this question.
Now, obviously, you probably don't talk about politics a lot, but I have to ask you one question. Donald Trump seems like a larger-than-life figure. Do you think he would do well in the world of professional wrestling?
Steven, do I?
Yeah.
Yes. Donald Trump is actually a WWE Hall of Famer.
What?
WWE was made for a guy like Donald Trump. Donald Trump has been to WrestleMania and actually shaved my boss, Vince McMahon's head.
Really?
Yes.
That's where he got his
head.
So,
guys, this is all my fault.
Wait a second. Is there any chance that this entire campaign is scripted and you know how it ends?
No.
No?
Yes.
So that's something everyone ever should know. That should be part of the part of every history book.
Right. And the fact that he, you know, even asked, oh, could it be scripted is what we've been getting to. Not the conspiracy part of it of, oh, this is a work. You know, we joke about that part of it, but it is at least that it has the same logic of wrestling and
yeah.
the same lessons of lesson of wrestling. Excuse
so
me.
Let's move on to how great Cena is. By the way, just watch the stuff for Colbert and Cena. I think it's okay. You liked it more than me.
You know, I to be honest, I like his interview. I liked when he was taking shots at his own genitals. That'd be Cena. And I mean, I didn't the bully sequence not as much. They clearly that's the problem. They don't get it other than Cena's a big guy.
Sure. Okay. So. Moving on. Cena's probably best appearance on television in the last 2 months was hosting the ESPYs. We've talked about this. I thought it was really, really well done. He was able to handle heavy and light segment to segment with extreme amount of ease, And now, today, actually.
Today, ESPN has announced that they will be covering wrestling, professional wrestling, like they cover other sports.
You sent me this article, and I think you should read a part of it. This is from Chad Millman, ESPN Vice President, Editorial Director, Domestic Digital Content. What a title. This is what he told The Wrap.
I was sitting in the audience of the ESPYs and watching John Cena do his thing. He was incredible. Seeing some of the sketches that were done, I turned to my boss and said, we could clip each of these things and throw them on the website right now if we had the site up at that moment.
Now, Grantland, which was part of ESPN, kind of, sort of covered wrestling on a biweekly structure. That's no longer there. Now the main guy that does it, David Shoemaker's at The Ringer. He's probably the best wrestling writer, but he's more of an essayist. He'll write a longish essay every 2 to 3 weeks and sort of summarize where it stands, either in the pantheon of wrestling or in the current pop culture of wrestling. This is going to be a little bit different. Continue, please.
Yeah, we want to cover it like we do any other sport, such as NFL, Major League Baseball, NBA, everything else we cover, with credibility and authenticity.
Authenticity. There's going to be more authenticity in covering the presidential election than from one of the nominees who happens to be in the WWE Hall of Fame. I would like to point out right now, 538 is owned by ESPN.
Right.
So in a tangential way, yeah,
they've already been covering it plenty.
For a very long time.
Yeah.
But unlike, it's not just going to be the WWE, they're going to cover other factions, they're going to cover Mexican wrestling, Japanese wrestling, wrestling from India, wherever, which is great.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see, it's, you know, when they say Japan and Mexico, I'm curious what that actually amounts to. I'm curious how close, because they obviously have this relationship with WWE. John Coachman, you know, works at ESPN, has worked at WWE, has a segment I think they're doing every Wednesday now where he has somebody on from the WWE. They obviously have a really close relationship with specifically WWE. So I'm curious if it's going to be like the WWE's universe, which also makes reference to these other companies, but not their direct competitors.
It's also interesting because NBC is one of the people that doesn't own WWE, but definitely broadcasts the majority of their programming.
Through Universal and USA.
Yeah,
and all
they're
that.
The home of Monday Night Raw and SmackDown Live. Now, the pay-per-views are still just WWE, so they definitely want as much mainstream coverage as possible. We just talked about a CBS show, but ESPN is ABC. That's Disney. So now we're trying to hit every single network, as much mainstream stuff as possible, which leads us to our next story. Today, was it today, about mm-hmm. Stephanie McMahon?
Yes.
This Ms. Stephanie McMahon told NBC Out her organization is committed to inclusive storytelling and said,
when it makes sense, absolutely, we will integrate LGBT storylines into our programming.
Okay, so there is a gay wrestler, and we've talked about him
yes.
quite a bit.
We've talked about Darren Young, who is currently making Darren Young great again. But they have references before. They've walked this line with Darren Young. Darren Young in real life is gay, and they've acknowledged this in so much as when they talk about how inclusive they are, Darren Young is gay. The character, Darren Young in quotes, is not gay because almost all the characters are asexual.
Correct.
Storyline-wise.
Correct.
So it hasn't come up. They haven't made a storyline of it. But Stephanie had previously gone out of her way to be like, no, Darren Young, the wrestler, is not gay. Just Darren Young, the person. So this is a change in that where they're saying, possibly in the future, we could make a storyline out of this.
Sort of like how there was a change at the 2016 RNC when a billionaire said, hey, I'm gay, and everyone cheered.
Yeah, that would be a change.
Yeah. This is interesting for many, many reasons. Number one, good. Great.
Yeah, no, it's a great thing.
Well, let's go back to our number one babyface, John Cena, who happens to have a gay brother in real life.
Yeah.
Awesome, supportive, has said glowing things about his brother, went on Larry King's Not Larry King Live in 2014.
Right.
And said great things about him. But also, earlier in his run in the WWE, wasn't so great with gay people.
Yeah, in his in the feud with The Rock and The Miz 2011, when he was still rapping a lot.
He was still rapping in 2011 a lot?
Not a lot, but he had brought back the raps for that.
Oh, wow.
The raps. He would rap his promos and take shots, and he was making fun of The Rock.
Finally, The Rock came back, and everyone was getting with it. Till he said I was talking trash, but he would never be specific. It's because I wasn't talking trash, Rock. I was talking truth. You left us hanging high and dry to play a fairy with a tooth. And then you walk into this ring and tell these people that I'm lame, man. He wore lipstick and Get Shorty and rocked a skirt for the game plan. And you're electrifying, yes! But hang with me, that's just absurd. See, now you got to tell your family you just got schooled by Barney's turd. Oh, no. Wait. That's your material. You can have your joke back. Just don't go racing to Witch Mountain Rock because your mountain is broke back.
And the WWE and John Cena apologized to GLAAD for that. And it's interesting because now in this current regime where they're saying they've had GLAAD come in, speak to the entire writing team, give a whole tutorial on sensitivities, right words, wrong words, why those words matter, they've crossed paths with GLAAD several times. So it isn't, you know, that not only in 2011 apologizing, they also had this kind of role with them of consulting in 2002 when they were doing a big storyline where a tag team, Billy and Chuck, were basically the ambiguously gay duo. And it was kind of like they did this thing where one of them proposed to the other to be his partner, to be his tag partner. And then they were having a wedding, and they showed up at the wedding, and, you know, they go, oh no, we're not gay. And the preacher turned out to be Eric Bischoff in Old Face. It was very strange, but GLAAD had brought in like, oh, we're going to do this really inclusive thing. And they had egg on their face because it was a fucking joke. It was exactly what you think the WWE would do in 2002.
So things have changed a little bit in the, since Brian Pillman got that gun.
Yeah, we'll see what actually changes. I mean, as recent as Monday, you have, you know, your opening show promo with two of your young stars, three young stars.
Kevin, you got my back?
Yeah, I thought it was like a rhetorical question. I got your back. Okay, I got your back.
You got his back, and you've got his back. Like Bert and Ernie, you're scrubbing his back. He's scrubbing your back, and you're in the very same bathtub.
Oh, you think that's funny, huh? You think that's funny? Really? Really? Only a stupid idiot would think that was funny.
And I understand that, but there's also Breezango.
Which, once again, they're doing the ambiguously gay duo with them, where they will cut a backstage promo where they get into the same tanning bed,
yeah,
tip to tip, and have no tan lines.
Cool.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see what happens with Breezango if they have more time to actually cut promos, see if anyone cuts promos on them, see if that it goes to that angle. I mean, you know, they had been feuding. They are the result. The tag team is the result of a feud with Goldust and R-Truth. And I mean, Goldust's
entire gimmick
was based on kind of gay panic and androgyny, and created a lot of headaches for them. Watching those 96 Raws when they still have signs that have the F word and people are chanting that to Goldust was it's pretty shocking.
We've come a long way.
Come a long way, baby.
Final two stories. Number one is, I can't believe we talked about Rhino this much in 2016.
Yeah.
Rhino, real name Rhino for all intents and purposes, is the Republican nominee for the 15th district in the state of Michigan.
State House. Let's not go
in
crazy.
Dearborn, Michigan.
Right.
He won his primary on the night of SmackDown Live 2 weeks ago, and then this week talked for the first time in a very long time on mic to another wrestler. The premise is Heath Slater does not currently have a contract, and Rhino does. So the fake GM told the wrestler, "Hey, if you win this fight, Heath Slater, we're going to give you a contract." So Heath Slater goes to Rhino.
"Look, man, I've got two kids. I really, really need this job. I just bought a pool, and can you just help me out here?
Look, last week, I won my primary election in Michigan. I have constituents I need to impress, and I can't let them down.
My four kids are my constituents, and I can't let them down either."
"I thought you just said you had two kids."
For the first time, we are now referencing an active race. I understand that it's a state house, but still.
I'm actually surprised.
An active race.
Because it's at the state house level, no one is bringing this up. There's no fairness doctrine stuff to worry about.
There should be, though.
Right.
There really should be. It's because he goes by a fake name or a different name? His God-given name, Rhino?
His God-given name, Rhino. Well, if God made him look like a rhino, he should have named him Rhino.
No, you've always said refrigerator box with a head.
Yeah. Refrigerator box, a washer dryer, maybe. I don't know.
So this is a thing that I can't. There's really no notes to it. There's no politics or wrestling comparison because it's literally talking about politics and then going to wrestle.
And then spearing a guy and denying him that contract because he stands up for the people of Michigan's Fightin' 15th.
Yeah, this is a really fascinating time. And it's great that the most fascinating stuff isn't necessarily what Trump is saying. And it's not necessarily what Hillary Clinton is saying, which is very little because she doesn't want to talk about any of this. Because
why would you bother when your poll, your polling gets better every day? She's a point behind in South Carolina, the worst state in this great nation.
No, South Carolina's not the worst state.
Yeah, it is the worst state.
No.
It's pretty bad.
I'm trying to think.
Politically, it's pretty bad.
Oh, politically.
First,
politically.
First to secede, last to sign the declaration.
All right, politically. Politically. Yeah. Not in general.
Okay, yeah, it's pretty. They got the beach.
Yeah. Okay, so finally, this is not on our page, but we need to talk about it. It's the story of the week for Donald Trump. It's not the gun thing.
What is it?
It's ISIS.
All right.
So the reason why we didn't write this down is because there's no wrestling equivalent that's as insane as a nominee for president claiming the current sitting leader started ISIS.
ISIS is honoring President Obama. He is the founder of ISIS. He's the founder of ISIS. Okay? He's the founder. He founded ISIS. And I would say the co-founder would be Crooked Hillary Clinton. Co-founder, Crooked Hillary Clinton.
Yeah. There's really nothing. That's
There's
the thing.
There's nothing. I couldn't think of anything.
And it's, you know, it's this nuclear heat that he's generated since the he hit the 100-day to go mark, where each of these things should, fell a normal candidate. But he's been saying this stuff literally since the first day he ran, when he said Mexicans are drug dealing or drug smuggling rapists. And it's getting increasingly, and now it's this fever pitch. But as we've seen, he's a heel getting heat, and crowds like that, fans like that. Except eventually, the heel gets his comeuppance, because, I mean, that's the Roland Barthes thing. The heel, it's this, it's not a, behaving to the rules. That's what the heel does. And he's not, you know, conventional wisdom and the rules of political discourse and decorum out the window. So that's what gets the heat. But to have that kind of release, he needs to get the swift kick. November 8th.
Do you think that the WWE is going to write in a storyline where, like, Seth Rollins claims Finn Balor's the head of ISIS or started ISIS? Because, like,
I mean, IRA. Naturally, right?